the earth, the age of the earth, and looking at it from a science standpoint. Looking at it from a science standpoint, and I kind of put together a lot of things rather quickly, so I feel real sorry for Rosemarie and Marcia trying to follow along these notes because I've got magazine articles that I'm reading from and all kinds of things. So, but we live in a world, unfortunately, and David mentioned that this morning in his lesson, if you were in here in the auditorium class, he mentioned where people today are just bombarded. And that, I think, is an appropriate word. Bombarded with anti-biblical concepts and principles. And it was mentioned even about Disney and things like that, that, you know, when I was growing up, certainly you wouldn't have heard things like that from that type of company. But now it seems like our culture takes every opportunity to try and bring down, destroy people's faith in the Bible. That's done TV and movies, well, in any and every type of media outlet it is used. It's done through government, through the education system, through the legal system, and on and on and on. Just so many different avenues that, of course, ultimately it's Satan, that Satan is using to attack the credibility of the Bible. Because, and think about this, if Satan causes people to doubt the first few chapters of the Bible, why would people have faith in the rest of the Bible? So Satan is very wily. He's very smart. So he knows how to attack. What he does is he attacks the foundation. He attacks the foundation of the Bible. And once that foundation crumbles in many people's eyes, then he's got them. If Genesis chapter 1 isn't true, why would John chapter 3 be true? If Genesis chapter 2 isn't true, why would 1 Peter chapter 3 be true? So it all falls or stands together. Either the Bible is completely true or it's false. There isn't any, well, some of the Bible's true and some of it isn't. And it's either all or nothing. And of course, unfortunately, so many in the religious world even has given up faith in the Bible and just turned their faith over to the world. Is basically what it amounts to. And one area in particular that is attacked and Bible believers are made fun of is in the age of the earth, the age of the world, the age of our solar system, and so on. And the idea is that anybody that believes that the earth is not several billion years old, then is ignorant, uneducated, and so on. And of course, those of you who know who Bill Nye is, that was recently one of his big issues and some of his, you know, he's a very well-known science guy on TV, and he recently came out just a few weeks ago talking about people that believe in the Bible and believe in creation are really stupid and ignorant. And those are the type of terms he used on his show. And of course, his show is geared to younger people. So what are younger people hearing? That the Bible has errors in it. You cannot trust the Bible. And that if you don't believe everything science says, then you're ignorant and stupid. And so that's been a big issue for about the past month or so. So, is there any, and this is the thing we want to look at tonight, is there any science evidence that says the earth is young? And by young, I mean not 4.5 billion years old. Is there any science evidence? See, the media says there isn't any. And that's what they want to drive home, is that all science, regardless of what it is, every bit of scientific evidence says the earth is billions of years old. And that's what we want to look at briefly. A lot of this comes from, not all of it, but a lot of it comes from a source called 101 Evidences for a Young Age of the Earth. And the reason there's 101 is just to show you that there's a vast amount of evidence. Obviously, we're not going to do 101. Some of them are very, very technical. Some of them are very detailed and would take half an hour to an hour just to talk about one of them. So we're going to skim over and just hit some of the highlights in several different areas. And the first thing, and this was something David brought up tonight or this morning, was that no one, or maybe it was Skip that brought it up, no one was there. There was no scientific instruments at the beginning. There was no recording devices at the beginning. There were no people there at the beginning. So therefore, you cannot do any type of experiment or observation about the beginning and the formation of the earth. So everything, then, is just based upon evidences, facts, that go back to that point. Sometimes that's called historical science or origin science. I use those terms in my class every year. I know everybody in here but Tori. The other three have all had me in class. Tori has been lucky. She's avoided me so far. The other three have probably heard me say that before. There's two types of science. There's experimental science, observational science, and then there's origins or historical science. And they're vastly different. But again, the media wants to say that it's all the same. Science is science. But of course, that's not true. So, we can go back and see. But what we do want to look at is that there's many categories, many different categories of evidence for the age of the earth that says that it is much, much younger than is asserted by so many in the world today. The main principle that's used by scientists, whether they be geologists, biologists, whatever, is the idea, the principle of something called uniformitarianism. And all that means is that everything we see today has been exactly the same way since the beginning. In other words, every process is uniform. Nothing has ever changed. And of course, the Bible says that's not true, right? 2 Peter chapter 3, you begin in verse 1 and go all the way down to verse 8. Peter says there are scoffers that say, where's the promise of his coming? Hasn't everything been the same since the beginning? Then what's Peter's reply? No, everything's not the same, because there was a great flood in Noah's day. And he goes on and talks, of course, about how the world will end up being destroyed, verses 7 and 8. So, that's the idea. And there's many assumptions that goes along with this idea of things being uniform. Science is filled with assumptions. Every science principle, every science principle, detailed subject, it all has assumptions. And if the assumptions aren't correct, then everything that follows is wrong. Kind of like when I teach class, I say, if you start out with something that's wrong, then the rest of it's going to be wrong. Well, that's the way it is with these so-called evidences that many in the scientific world use. If the assumptions are wrong, the rest of it's wrong. So, there are, as I mentioned, many, many categories of evidence for a young earth. What's the first category? The first category is going to be in biology. Biology. A couple of things, two or three things I want to mention in biology that are things that we've probably heard on TV if you read about those type of things very much. One is DNA. DNA is the kind of one of the, not the building blocks, but what kind of regulates how we live and all the processes in us. It's like an essential part. Without DNA, of course, we couldn't exist. DNA that's been found in ancient fossils. There's been DNA that's extracted from bacteria that the evolutionists would tell us was 425 million years old, saying that this bacteria has lived for 425 million years, and the DNA, though, can't last for more than a few thousand. So they have no answers to how DNA has lasted for 425 million years when it typically only lasts a few thousand. The next one, one of my favorites, recently, within the past two or three years anyway, they have extracted from dinosaurs, in other words, the dinosaur bones and fossils that they found, they've extracted from dinosaur bones blood cells, blood vessels, proteins that says that those dinosaurs are a very, very young specimen. And of course, dinosaurs were allegedly went extinct like 65, 70 million years ago. That's when they allegedly went extinct. That's not, they lived long before that. But yet they've been able to extract real blood cells and real blood tissue and protein from these. And guess what? They haven't been able to explain it because it contradicts everything they know about blood cells and blood vessels. Living fossils. And by living fossils, I mean things that are today, they look like exactly the ones they find in the fossil record. Exactly the same. The things haven't changed at all. Whether they be insects or animals or plants. And they found all of these in fossils, and some of them they say are hundreds and hundreds of millions of years old, and during that time they haven't changed a bit. They look exactly like the ones today. There's no change whatsoever. Well, if those things were evolving, you should see big differences in what they look like during those millions of years. And of course, several years ago, this was a few decades ago, they found what they thought was had been extinct for millions of years, and that was the coelacanth, which is a fish, and they've found many of them since then. And this fish was allegedly went extinct millions of years ago. And yet they found one, and it looks exactly like the ones from millions of years ago. No change whatsoever. Hasn't changed. What does this mean? Well, before we go any further, one of the points I want to make is, and you see this so often in science, unfortunately, if something doesn't fit, if something doesn't fit, like when they find something like the coelacanth, or if they find something like the DNA in dinosaurs or living fossils or whatever, if they find something that doesn't fit the age they believe it is, they don't count it. They call it an anomaly. It says, well, this doesn't fit our idea, so it doesn't go in the data. And I know for a fact that happens because people have been discovered and seen to have done this repeatedly. So if it doesn't fit, then it's thrown out. It's an anomaly. Well, most of what we're going to talk about tonight are anomalies because they don't fit. But there's hundreds and thousands of bits of evidence that don't fit. Well, since most scientists don't believe in a young earth or in creation, so when they don't fit, they are just simply tossed aside. And that's pretty sad, but nevertheless, it's true. Those are a few in biology. Go on to geology real quick. Several, if you've seen pictures like of the Grand Canyon, you see the various layers in it that were laid down. In several places, there have been fossils of trees that were fossilized, and those trees went through millions and millions of years, an evolutionist idea of rock formations. So therefore, this tree was buried during millions of years. So that tree had to have lived for tens of millions of years. That's one old tree. But what do scientists call it? Well, that's an anomaly. Why? Because it doesn't fit our idea about those layers. So it's tossed out. But many, many, many of those have been found all over the world. Many experiments have been shown. We talk about some of these in some of my science classes at school. But the standard belief among scientists is that it takes coal millions of years to form. It takes oil millions of years to form. But you can make coal and oil very, very quickly. It takes very little equipment, and you can make it using the exact same type of forces that are seen in nature. We're not talking about something complicated. So coal and oil can be formed very, very quickly. Well, why isn't that mentioned? Well, because it doesn't fit the theory that coal is formed over millions of years by various plant life decaying and pressing down on top of one another and the pressure causing it to form. So it's not mentioned. It's not mentioned at all. Fossils, this is another one of my favorites. In fossils, you can actually see, in rock layers, you can actually see raindrops. A fossilized raindrop. Now, fossils take thousands or millions of years to form. How in the world could you fossilize a raindrop? How could you possibly do that? Things like that, little ripples like you would see in water, fossilized. Well, obviously, that didn't take millions of years to form. That had to be formed very quickly, very, very fast. There's no way it could form over a long time. Well, those are anomalies. They don't fit our theory. The amount of salt in the world's oldest lake says that it was formed just a very, very short time ago. Another one of my favorites, Rapid Canyon Formation. Now, if you go out to the Grand Canyon, if you take a tour, they're going to tell you that the Grand Canyon took several million years to form. Well, in the past 30 years, what Mount St. Helens was like, what, 1980 or something like that, early 80s? Several canyons have been formed due to rapid water erosion all over, even just in the United States alone. There have been places, of course, the one by Mount St. Helens. There was one in southwest Georgia called Providence Canyon. There was the Burlingame Canyon near Walla Walla, Washington. Now these, if geologists hadn't seen them form, in other words, if that history wasn't known and they went to see them, those canyons would have taken millions of years to form. But some of them were formed in a matter of minutes. This is one that was formed upstream of the Grand Canyon, and it was called the Glen Canyon Dam Failure. The Glen Canyon Dam, this was also in the early 80s. The lake level, they had had massive amounts of rain, and so the dam was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, or the water level was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, they had to start releasing the water through the spillway. Well, the spillway broke, I guess would be the best word, and so all of that water started coming down at once. Now, in a matter of minutes, a few minutes, a canyon 32 feet by 40 feet by 150 feet was formed. And think about how big that is. And that was formed in a few minutes by just water, excess water coming from behind a dam. It's amazing. And that's just one example. But that's an anomaly. Doesn't fit the standard definition. The rate of erosion of coastlines and continents. Water gaps. These are when you go to large mountain ranges and you see like where rivers have formed in between mountains. Those formed, they're called discordant drainage systems. They're called discordant because they don't fit the standard idea of how long those gorges should have formed. And that's a scientific term. That's what the scientists call it, discordant. And they call it discordant because they formed too quickly. They didn't form in the vast amount of time they should have formed, so they're discordant. And then, of course, one of the classic ones is Niagara Falls. How it is eroding, and if it was had been around for millions of years, of course, it would have eroded all of that land away, and there wouldn't even be a Niagara Falls. One of Mark Twain's favorite was the Mississippi River Delta, and how far it, you know, if you go down, you know, to New Orleans and down, and you see the delta that was formed from all the sand and silt that it picks up, and so much is formed each year, and it's pretty easy to calculate. And Mark Twain was not a fan of modern science, and he wrote some very funny, disparaging remarks about so-called science, and I wish you had. You can get online and read it, but he makes fun of it something fierce, and it's hysterically funny. But in it, he talks about how if science was true and right about these things being uniform, then like New Orleans would have been up around St. Louis just like 1,000 years ago or something. I mean, it's so funny, and he makes fun of it. But he uses numbers and facts that the scientists provided to show them how ridiculous the idea of uniform motion and uniform principles are. The rates of stalactite and stalagmite growth. A lot of those can form very quickly. You can have large stalactites and stalagmites grow that evolutionists would say took millions of years. Some of those can grow in matters of days and weeks. All depends upon the processes. But those are anomalies because they don't fit the standard theory. Everybody, I'm sure, has heard about carbon 14 and how it dates various things, and we're not going to spend much time on it because there are so many examples of carbon 14 dating or some of the other radioisotopes that are completely ridiculous. In other words, they will date fairly new formed material at millions of years, which it had just been formed, so that would be impossible. Or they'll take the same sample and use several different methods of dating it and get vastly different answers for the exact same sample. So all of those forms of radioisotope dating are all questionable, and certainly beyond just a few thousand years, there's no reason to assume any of them have any credibility at all. There's lots of things about astronomy and the universe and all of those things that are worthwhile to talk about. The Earth and the Moon are receding from each other about 4 centimeters a year. So in my lifetime, that's been, 220 centimeters? So we're 220 centimeters further apart. I can tell that we're a little further apart. 220 centimeters is, 7 feet? Something like that. I can tell the 7 feet. It just looks a little further. But anyway, that's the distance. Well, you don't have to go back very far because the moon's not all that far away from us, astronomically speaking. And if the Earth and the moon were indeed billions of years old, they would have been touching long before that. So obviously it's not been uniform. it's not been uniform. So you can't assume that it has been. Lots more about astronomy. Comets that don't fit the standard idea. Whether it be Halley's Comet, which doesn't fit the standard time period. Hale-Bopp doesn't fit the standard time period. Then the last evidence I want to look at is human history. And it's fascinating in and of itself. Human population growth. If we use evolutionist concept of uniform population growth, less than 0.5% per annual growth from six people 4,500 years ago would produce today's population almost exactly. Of course, that goes back to the flood. Almost exactly. Now, if the evolutionary timeline is true, then human population growth, I'm just quoting from this magazine, then human population growth and genetic diversity would be miraculously unchanged for a few million years before suddenly exploding in just the last few thousand years. This is something they can't explain. And what this means is, if man's truly been here for, you know, 4, 5, 6 million years, they keep, you know, pushing that number back all the time, obviously. It was 2 million years, but that's old hat now. It's more than that now. But there was no diversity at all, according to them, for millions and millions of years. Millions of years. No diversity in the human race at all. And then guess what? About 5,000 years ago, suddenly there was an explosion of diversity. And of course, you know what that corresponds to. Time of the Tower of Babel. And that's their numbers and that's their time period. So why would the human population for millions and millions of years stay stagnant as far as the diversity and then suddenly, 5,000 years ago, explode into all the different types of races and so forth? Well, evolutionists can't explain it because it doesn't make any sense. It's an anomaly. But the Bible says how it happened. Exactly how it happened. Where are all the dead people? And you think, well, that's kind of a strange thing to say. But if man's been on the planet for millions of years, then where's all the skeletons at? No one knows where they are. Well, of course, there aren't any because he's not been around that long. But there should be vast numbers of human skeletons. Vast numbers of them. But of course, they're not out there. And lastly, the origin of agriculture. If man's been around for that long a time period, even if he's only been around 100,000 years, why would man, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, never come up with the idea of planting something in the soil? And then suddenly, a few thousand years ago, get the idea of, hey, I think I can grow this in the ground. There's no explanation for the origin of agriculture. To evolutionists, to creationists, of course, we know that God was behind it. And that leads me to the last thing I want to talk about, and that is to young people in particular. There is becoming a vast antagonism in the educational academic world to people who believe in creation and who believe in God and who believe in a young earth and so forth. And some people believe that the day's coming when creationists and people who believe in the Bible will not be given degrees from colleges because of what they believe. And by that I mean people who major in biology or biochemistry or physics or any of those natural sciences. That if you don't believe in evolution, if you don't believe that the earth and the universe are billions of years old and that man came from, had common ancestors with apes, that if you don't believe that, they will not give you a degree. And that's very possible because it gets worse and worse and worse. Recently, one of the medical schools in the Midwest, one of the main medical school professors, said his opinion was you should not ever give a medical degree to someone who believes in creation. They cannot be a good doctor and believe in creation. You have to believe in evolution to be a doctor. And he came out publicly and said that from his medical school. So, is that coming? You know, is that day coming? I, of course, have no idea. But the antagonism toward Bible believers and people who believe in God and who believe in creation and believe in these things we've talked about, that antagonism has gotten much, much, much worse. Will it get any worse again? We don't know because we can't tell the future. But we need to be prepared. As David said this morning from 1 Peter 3:15, we need to be ready and willing and able to give an answer. Which goes back to what I said at the very beginning about the conversation I had with my daughter about her boyfriend and his beliefs. See, being able and ready to give answers are vital. That we must be able to do that. Even like David said, giving somebody a tape. That's all it took with that one man he mentioned this morning, guy he works with. And that's maybe all it takes. But we must be willing to engage people in those conversations. Because if they don't believe in the foundation of the Bible, it is pointless to go anywhere else. It is pointless. They must believe in the foundation of the Bible, that God exists, that He's the one that created the world, that He created man and woman as they are. They didn't evolve from anything. And He gave them an eternal soul. You know, those are foundational beliefs, and without them, the rest of the Bible simply doesn't stand up to scrutiny. That's why we must engage people with these things, and that's why it's so important. It's vital that we be able to do that. I know tonight hasn't been any evangelistic type of lesson, but it all goes back to, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You know, that statement is either true or it's false. You know, He either did that or He didn't do that. And if He didn't create the heavens and the earth in the beginning, then there's no reason to believe the rest of the Bible at all. But that's the foundation. That's the belief. That's the faith. And tonight, if there's any need you have to respond in any way, then we want to encourage you to come as we're led in this invitation song. Let's stand, please.